You're listening to an IEA podcast. Today you'll hear an update from our Brexit unit, run by the IEA's chief economist, Julian Jessop. Coming up, digital officer Madeline Grant discusses the concept of unilateral free trade with Julian, a policy he thinks should be considered during the Brexit negotiations. Julian gives a comprehensive explanation of what unilateral free trade would mean in practice, and how after Brexit, the UK will be free to set its own trade rules and tariff barriers. Julian and Madeline also discuss the potential disadvantages, especially in the short term, of such a policy, mainly to British producers, who will face increased competition with no guarantee it will be easier to export to other parts of the world. Julian argues that almost any policy change would have its ups and downs, but under a free trade policy, the economy as a whole will be better off, providing an opportunity to compensate those who might miss out in the short term. Julian argues for a pragmatic and phased approach to policy change, but remains committed to the idea that government should not be in the business of cutting off consumers from the benefits of free trade. If you like what you hear, visit our website, iea.org.uk, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, username IEA London.
Julian, you and a number of other economists have recommended that the UK adopts a policy of unilateral free trade. Now, before we delve any further into this, can you just give us a brief overview of what this means in practice?
Well, fortunately, the idea of unilateral free trade is very simple. It means lowering your own barriers to trade, regardless of whether other countries immediately reciprocate. So in practice, this means cutting or even completely eliminating tariffs on imports. It can also mean lowering so-called non-tariff barriers, such as regulations that discriminate against goods and services imported from abroad. So it's an idea that applies both to tariff and non-tariff barriers, but essentially it's moving unilaterally, cutting your own barriers before expecting anybody else to follow.
So why is it particularly relevant to the Brexit debate? I mean, surely making your country a favourable place to do business is a practice that we've been adopting for decades.
Well, it's certainly not a new idea. I mean, the idea of unilateral free trade goes back hundreds of years. But the problem is that we've not been able to do it, because as long as the UK is a member of the customs union of the European Union, it has to adopt the European Union's rules for trading with the rest of the world. For example, we have to impose the EU's common external tariff on imports from third countries. We have to impose the EU's non-tariff barriers as well. But after Brexit, the UK is finally going to be free to set its own rules, as long as it treats all countries equally. That's the one caveat imposed on us by the WTO. But if we're planning to lower our trade barriers to one country, why wouldn't we lower them to all? I don't think that's a hugely onerous constraint.
Can you talk me through some of the benefits that this could bring both for the British public and for our general economy?
Well, essentially, the key point about unilateral free trade is that it puts the interests of consumers first, above those of producers and other vested interest groups. The idea is that people should be free to buy the best and cheapest goods and services from wherever they like, even if this is from abroad, without the government or some other supranational organisation getting in the way. As a result of this, the prices of all sorts of things that we currently import will fall, because there's no longer a tariff on top of the ordinary price to pay. So this would allow people to buy more, but also to spend more on other things. If they're spending less on imports, then they're free to spend more money also on things that might be produced domestically. The UK could also then act as a champion of free trade for the rest of the world, as our own economy benefits from rising real incomes. Other countries will see the benefit too. So far, a small number of countries have adopted unilateral free trade, for example, Singapore, Hong Kong, New Zealand, but they are all small countries. The UK will be the first large economy to do so. So the signal value, if you like, of the UK economy doing that will be all the greater.
Yeah, and it hasn't really done any harm for Singapore, Hong Kong or New Zealand. But what about some of the potential downsides of unilateral free trade? I mean, particularly for when we're talking about British producers.
Well, this is the usual argument against unilateral free trade, is that it puts British producers at a disadvantage. So they would face increased competition from overseas, but they wouldn't have any guarantee that they themselves would find it any easier to export if other countries don't reciprocate by lowering their own tariffs. There's another argument related to that, that the British government might find it harder to negotiate free trade deals with other countries if it's already given up the bargaining chip of imposing tariffs. So there are some potential downsides, and I think it is important to acknowledge those.
What would you say to some of the detractors of unilateral free trade?
Well, I think first we had to acknowledge that there would be some losers from free trade, but of course also to stress that would be true of almost any policy change. Provided the economy as a whole is better off, it should be possible to compensate the losers if you wanted to and still come out ahead. Another way to approach this is to simply go back to the first principles of free trade and to think through some simple examples. For example, presumably no one thinks it's sensible to impose import tariffs on things that the UK doesn't itself produce, so things like coffee and oranges. Dropping the EU's barriers here, I think, immediately after Brexit would be a no-brainer if you would object to that. Especially, of course, given the benefit to developing countries that could then, you know, sell more coffee and oranges to us. So the next step, what then about things that we do produce ourselves, but where other countries have a genuine comparative advantage? Well, again, first economic principles are that you should buy goods from whoever makes them best and at the lowest price. So why should we be subsidising domestic producers if consumers could benefit from going elsewhere? There will be some disruption, of course, in the short term, but in the long term, domestic producers should be exposed to fair competition, and that's good for productivity and growth.
It's also very natural to the state of the economy. I mean, the economies are always changing, they're always in a state of flux, and this idea that there has to be continuity. The great changes that propelled human civilization have created huge levels of disruption. I mean, you know, the Industrial Revolution takes people out of jobs, but 100 years later, living standards have dramatically improved. I suppose perhaps we do need to be less wedded to this idea of continuity within the economy.
I think that's absolutely right. And to choose a, you know, very topical example, if you buy a cheap consumer good, typically something made of plastic, maybe a toy, maybe a, you know, easily disposable consumer good, the chances are it's been made in China. That's been a consistent trend over the last 10, 20 years. Now, are we really worse off because we're importing low value added manufacturing goods from China? I don't think so. China has a clear competitive advantage in those areas. It means that we no longer have that many manufacturers of cheap consumer disposables made of plastic in this country. But we've been able to move up the value chain. We're producing higher quality goods, higher value added goods. So we're both better off in this trade. You know, China is better at producing the cheap stuff. We're better at producing the higher value added stuff. That's just the natural process. Now, admittedly, anybody who 30 years ago was employed in this country making a cheap piece of plastic kit has probably lost that job. But then they've moved on to other jobs, other new jobs that perhaps we hadn't anticipated 30 years ago, but are at least, if not more valuable than the jobs they were doing in the past. So this sort of natural change in the economy, I think, is something desirable. And it should essentially be driven by the consumer deciding what it is they want to buy and where from, at what price and what quality, rather than the government deciding that certain sectors need protecting from free trade.
I mean, you've outlined the many benefits of unilateral free trade. Do you think that it's such a good idea that it should be immediately adopted, or would you prefer a more phased approach?
Well, I think this is where you have to be pragmatic. Although in unilateral free trade in principle is clearly the right way to go, it's important to recognise the transitional costs associated with a move to genuinely free trade. If we look at the New Zealand example, I think most people now would agree that New Zealand is much better off having adopted free trade, including the agricultural sector. But in the early years, it's extremely difficult, particularly for farmers in New Zealand. So I would favour a phased approach. You start by lowering tariffs on those things that you don't yourself produce. Then perhaps you move on to those things that you do produce, but where clearly you don't have an obvious comparative advantage. Also, I think most advocates of free trade would accept that multilateral trade deals are still optimal in many areas. So I'll be pursuing unilateral free trade in some areas, multilateral free trade in others. And above all, I'd want to retain the option to impose tariffs where they're the most egregious examples of dumping. So if a country was dumping steel on us, for example, at well below cost, then I'd want to prevent that because although we might benefit in the short term from importing cheap steel, if it drives our own domestic industries out of business, you know, in the long term, we might be worse off. But overall, the key point is that free trade means putting the interests of consumers first rather than producers. And I think it's disheartening that, you know, many people seem to favour continuing the current system, which is essentially protectionist rather than based on the fundamental principles of free trade and free markets.
Be sure to check out more podcasts, blogs, and reports by visiting the Brexit Unit section of the IEA's website.